Okay, welcome back to Math 3013, Linear Algebra. Okay, so we'll, I guess I should start asking if there are any questions out there. Okay, hearing none, let's start with reviewing what transpired on Monday, and then we'll make a little bit of more progress towards understanding the basic objects of this course, which are vectors inside an n-dimensional vector space. Okay, so last time I introduced two really basic items, but they're similar to one another, so I want to clarify again the distinction between them. That is the distinction between sets and ordered lists. We talk about a set, we're just talking about a collection of objects. We're not putting in them in any particular order. We're thinking of them as a group. And we use curly braces typically to denote elements of a set. So here I have written down a set containing three elements, and each element happens to be a number, one, minus three, and square root of two. Example of a set, an ordered list. It's similar to this. In fact, you can always get a set from an ordered list by simply ignoring the ordering of elements. But in an ordered list, though, the ordering is really crucial. And that's why we make the distinction between ordered lists and sets. We also make a distinction notation-wise as well, using either parentheses to enclose the ordered list, or we use square braces. And depending on whether we use parentheses or square braces, depends on the context in which we use. What we'll see is we'll typically use square braces when we're trying to denote vectors as ordered lists. Okay, so in fact, one of the things we defined on Monday was what a vector is inside this linear algebra course. And what it is, an ordered list of real numbers. We write them down by taking a set of numbers in a particular order, and then forming a list from them by writing them in order and closing them in square braces. All right, and then the number of numbers that go into the list is the dimension of the vector, And the individual numbers that appear in the list are called the components of the vector. And so in this example, Bob, we have a three-dimensional vector with components minus 1, 5, and the square root 2. All right, and then because these are ordered lists, two vectors are not going to be equal unless the numbers that are, not only do the numbers have to be the same in each ordered list, but they have to be written in exactly the same order in order to be regarded as equal. All right, now the other thing I'm going to review real quickly is two ways of specifying sets. One is as we've done before. We simply write down the elements in some order, but the order is immaterial. We write them down in some order and we enclose them in curly braces. And that's that defines a set very concretely. But an alternative way, and actually much more common in this course, is to specify a set by stating a property or characteristic that distinguishes the elements of that set. So for example, the set S that I've written above could also have been written as the set of real numbers such that their square is equal to 2. All right, so what I've done is I've said verbally what this notation below indicates. We're constructing a set, so that's why I'm using the curly braces. The basic objects are going to be real numbers, but we're going to put a condition on those real numbers. That's the purpose of this vertical line in the center of the set. You read that as such that. And so S is the set of real numbers, or you know, X's that are real numbers, such that their square is equal to 2. And I'm also introducing this triple line. This seems to be stronger than an equal. And in fact, I use this to indicate a mathematical definition. So S is actually defined by the expression on the right-hand side. And then the symbol, that vertical line there, is, you read that as such that. So S is the set of elements X that are happen to be real numbers such that their square is equal to 1. All right, and notice though, these two sets are the same, whether I define it by explicitly listing the elements or I set up the set by saying what I make it from and the condition that the elements have to satisfy. Okay, so actually what I want to point out here is that we can write sets differently. And so I say this is an equality and we can compare element by element and verify that's true. But more generally, when we have when we specify sets using properties or conditions, it's not so easy to see that they're actually the same set. So I just want to remind you that if you want to show that two sets are equal, either you have to compare them directly element by element, or you have to demonstrate that anytime you have an element of one set, it has to belong to the other set, and simultaneously, any element of the second set must also belong to the first set. If both these conditions are true, and only if both these conditions are true, are the two sets equal. So another way of putting this, two sets are equal if each is a subset of the other. But note that there's two conditions to check to verify this single equality. Okay, one last thing about sets, and that is their Cartesian products. So here, this is sort of a notational device. If you have two sets A and B, if I write A cross B or A times B, this is the set itself. It's a set, and it consists of all ordered pairs A and B. So here I'm still using, I'm indicating ordered lists using parentheses rather than square brackets, but this is still an ordered list. An ordered list with two elements, A preceding B in that list. Okay, and so in more set theoretic notation, the same definition would be written A times B is defined as the set of ordered pairs such that the first element is in A and the second element is always in the set B. Okay, and then we have the two fundamental sets that we'll use all the time in linear algebra, and they have their own symbols. We denote by this funny font, capital R, the set of real numbers. So that font is actually called Blackboard Bold. It's got double lines everywhere possible, I guess. And it denotes a set of real numbers. So not only the integers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 7, etc., the rational numbers, 7, 8, 999, 1,000, and the irrational numbers like the pi, the square root 2, etc. All the real numbers, the numbers that are typically you use in calculus in all applications. All right, and then distinct from that set is the set R superscript n, which is the set of all n-dimensional vectors. And here in this set theoretical notation, I've indicated that vector space Rn as a set consisting of ordered lists of n elements, where each element in each list is actually a real number. So it's a set of ordered lists of n real numbers, as before. And I point out that the ellipses here in this notation are simply to indicate that the pattern that was begun continues until it concludes with xn. And so, so this notation verbally is saying that Rn is the set order list of n real numbers. One thing I want to point out, though, is how this our notation for the set of n-dimensional vectors mimics its construction using Cartesian products. So you see that R effectively squared is the Cartesian product of R with itself. And similarly, R to the third could be regarded as the Cartesian product of R with itself three times. Okay, but remember, this is not multiplication of integers or multiplication of real numbers. This Cartesian product is taking an element from the first set and an element from the second set and combining it into an ordered list. Okay, so let's see. Is there n amount of ordered lists? So the number n is indicating how long the list is going to be. So for an n-dimensional vector, you want a list containing exactly n numbers. Okay, so n is the capital N is indicating the size of the list, how long it is. But we use that to distinguish between one-dimensional vectors, which basically all have to live on a line, two-dimensional vectors, which could span a plane, and three-dimensional vectors, which could generate a three-dimensional space. So this n is not, you'll think of it primarily as how many components a vector has, but it also indicates the dimension of the space in which these vectors live. Okay, so let's go back to linear algebra and our basic vector space, R superscript n. So what I'm going to do next is I'm going to introduce the two fundamental mathematical operations that we'll perform all the time in working with n-dimensional vectors. We'll learn how to add them, and we'll learn how to multiply vectors by numbers. Now here I'm using the Cartesian product notation. So what this vector addition is, this plus is just the symbol I'll use to indicate the operation. And then it's taking a pair of vectors. See, this Cartesian product means I'm going to take one element of Rn, I'm going to take another element of Rn, form a list, and then map that to another n-dimensional vector. While in scalar multiplication, what we do is we take a number, simply a real number, and an n-dimensional vector. Somehow I combine them and produce another n-dimensional vector. Okay, so this is all happening notationally, but I want you to get used to seeing this notation and realizing what it means mathematically, because it's not clear explicitly from the notation that if I had a vector, say v, 1, 2, and 3, and I had a vector w, let me put little arrows over those, that's maybe 1, 0, 1, that, what I'm trying to describe is how I'm going to add these two vectors. All right, so the vector addition is going to take a pair of vectors, and that's what I'm indicating with this Cartesian product notation. All right, well, let me just proceed forward and be much more explicit. Suppose we have two n-dimensional vectors, x and y. I'll use this shorthand notation where I use a blackboard bold to actually indicate all n components of a single n-dimensional vector. So the vector has n components, but it's a single vector in itself. And y is a vector that's distinct from x, at least notationally. When we add vectors, here's the rule. We take the first component of the first vector, add it to the first component of the second vector, and that will be the first component of the sum of x and y. And the second component of the sum is created by adding the second component of the individual summands. All right, so you should be familiar with this operation, either from freshman physics or calculus one. So we add vectors in the usual way, component by component. And here's an explicit example. It looks more complicated. It is 1 plus 2 is equal to 3. 3 plus 0 is equal to 3. Minus 1 plus 1 is equal to 0. A second really fundamental basic operation is scalar multiplication. And here, what you do is you start with a number and you a vector, and you combine them as follows. So on the left-hand side, you can think of this as the symbol that's going to represent the scalar multiple of a vector x by the number lambda. And on the right-hand side, I give you a formula for that. It's going to be obviously an n-dimensional vector because you see n components here. And the components of this scalar product are the components of the original vector, each multiplied by the same number lambda. All right, so here's the sample computation. If I take the vector 1, 3, 2, and I multiply by the number minus 2, the result is the vector minus 2, minus 6, minus 4. Okay, now this stuff is all really rudimentary, and you should be bored to tears with this. But the real point of this is that this set Rn and these two basic operations are the basis of the whole course. And what we're going to derive from these basic definitions is a lot of additional structure that can be used to analyze much more complicated things than you would think that you could describe by just ordered lists of numbers. But it's going to get abstract. So the emphasis right now is how concrete the basic definitions are. All right, so there'll be another point too that I'm just about to make. What I've described up to this point in today's lecture is vectors as ordered lists of numbers, but we have other ways of thinking of vectors. We can think about them visually as being represented by line segments with a particular direction and a certain length as well. So that raises the question, how do I pass between the two different renditions of what a vector should be? Is it a directed line segment or is it an ordered list of numbers? Well, in some sense, it's both. What we have to do is figure out how to correlate these two different ways of looking at vectors. And so to correlate a two-dimensional vector, a vector with two components, to and you can relate this to a directed line segment that's drawn in a two-dimensional plane. And the way you do that is let's go from directed line segment to ordered list. You start with a directed line segment, you establish a coordinate system whose origin is at the base of your directed line segment, and then you use a ruler to mark out the coordinate grid, and then you identify the coordinates of the tip of the vector relative to the origin that's placed at the base of the vector, and then that gives you an ordered list of numbers that you'll say is the, let's call it the linear algebraic vector that corresponds to this geometric vector. All right, so that's how you would pass from an intuitive idea of what a vector is to an actual calculational vector, an ordered list of numbers that are really just designed for calculations. But you can go the opposite way as well. Here, what you do, if you have an ordered list of numbers, you create a coordinate grid, and then you draw a line that starts at the origin of that coordinate grid to the coordinates that are specified by your ordered list. And then you can erase the coordinate grid, and you're left with a directed line segment. So you can go back and forth between these two pictures of what a vector is. It's an ordered list of numbers and this geometric rendition of a vector. So this actually brings up a very important point in this course, and that is the fact that somehow there's an abstract thing, a vector, and there's different ways of dealing with it. You can deal with it as a geometric object, or you can deal with it as an ordered list of numbers. But somehow there's an abstract thing that encapsulates both. This is sort of like the number three, representing lots of things. It could represent three pins, it could represent three fingers. There are many different versions of the number three. And that's a similar way you should think about vectors. There's an abstract idea like the number three, and there's various renditions of that idea. Okay, so we had a rule for adding vectors when we regard them as ordered lists of numbers. There's a similar rule that we can use directly on vectors thought of as directed line segments. So here's how that goes. Suppose I wanted to add these two directed line segments. Well, the rule for doing so is you, now remember, for these directed line segments, their position on the piece of paper is immaterial. You can move them around, but the one thing you can't change is the length of the vector or its direction. So we call that parallel transport, where we move a vector around on a piece of paper without changing its length or its direction. So what I can do to add these two directed line segments is I can move the second one so that its base is at the tip. I just sort of slide it over. And then I can draw a line that starts from the base of the first vector to the tip of the second vector. And then I can erase the original two summons up here, and I'm left with a directed line segment that's going to be the result of adding the first directed line segment to the second directed line segment. And in fact, this geometric method of adding vectors is completely compatible with our method of adding vectors as ordered lists of numbers. If I convert this to an ordered list of numbers, convert the second vector list to an ordered list of numbers, add those together, and then convert back to a geometric vector, it would replicate the vector I've got here at the bottom of the screen, done using purely geometric operations. Okay, so scalar multiplication, while even easier than vector addition when we think of vectors as ordered lists of numbers, it's actually a little bit more complicated when we think about it geometrically. Basically, what it does is it changes the length of a vector. However, it does more than that if the scalar multiple, the number lambda that you're going to multiply a vector by, if that happens to be a negative number, it not only changes the length, it actually reverses the direction. It doesn't change it to an arbitrary direction, it exactly reverses the direction. So let me show you how this works by looking at both the ordered list of numbers and a geometric vector. So if I had an ordered list 2, 1, and I scalar multiply it by the number -2, I get the vector -4, 2. So let's see what happens. So linear algebraically, scalar multiplication of the vector 2, 1 by the number -2 produces this, the ordered list -4, -2. But geometrically, what happens is this vector, this directed line segment, whose tip is at the coordinate point 2, 1, it gets sent to a different directed line segment. And what I hope you see in this picture is this directed line segment is just essentially heading in the same direction as the original vector, but because it's being multiplied by a negative number, it's actually heading in the opposite direction. And its length has also changed. It's changed by a factor of 2 because the magnitude of the scalar factor is 2. Okay, so in this course, I'm going to emphasize always vectors as ordered lists of numbers, but to communicate and pass on understanding of what's going on, sort of on an abstract or an intuitive level, I'll often resort to a geometric picture, so you have an alternative way of looking things and hopefully an alternative way of confirming results. Okay, and more importantly, the reason why we work with ordered lists of numbers is because I can really only draw geometric vectors on a piece of paper. I can depict them. If I have a good 3D graphic software, I can maybe depict them on a computer screen via some three-dimensional picture, or if you have VR, maybe an explicit three-dimensional picture. But if I, beyond three dimensions, I really can't even visualize a vector as a directed line segment because I don't have any arena that's four-dimensional that I can actually visualize. Although some people claim that if you include time, you can visualize it, but for all purposes, you cannot put it down on a piece of paper and see it as concretely as a simply a directed line segment on a piece of paper. So for dealing with more general vectors, vectors living in a four-dimensional space and beyond, really our only resource is to treat vectors as ordered lists of numbers. And then essentially all vectors behave the same as ordered lists of numbers. Okay, so as I remarked in the first lecture, you no doubt are coming to this course with an idea of vectors as they occur in physics and engineering, where they represent physical quantities with a direction and magnitude. And in your physics courses, you'll often see when in figures and pictures of and diagrams of what's going on, vectors represented as directed line segment. Hopefully familiar to you, but in fact, there are other objects that occur in physics and engineering that behave like vectors, but only when you view them abstractly enough do you see their vector-like qualities. So let me give you one example of that. In acoustics, air pressure fluctuations, for sound waves, can be represented as vectors. Now that should appall you, right? If I hear a noise, how do I see its direction? How do I see its magnitude? How do I see its components as ordered lists of numbers? Well, in fact, neither of those renditions of what a vector is going to help you understand how to think of air pressure fluctuations as a vector. Rather, the way you will understand them, air pressure fluctuations or sound waves as being vectors, is to understand the operations that you can perform on them and how those operations make sound waves behave like vectors. So what does adding vectors mean when I think of these vectors as sound waves? Well, You can combine sounds. If you listen to an orchestra, you can you hear the total orchestra, the sound of the violin section, the sound of the trumpet section, and the sound of the individual violins and trumpets. So the way we would think of a sound wave as a vector, well, it's because we can add them together simply by combining sounds as you would, and they will simply combine and you will hear multiple sounds rather than a single sound if you're listening to an orchestra. Okay, so in some sense, we have a way of adding sound waves. Now, what about scalar multiplication? Well, scalar multiplication, that could be implemented by increasing the volume or decreasing the volume of a sound, or what we would call the amplitude of the vibration. And we can change that by a positive number. We just would rescale a vibration, making it half the amplitude or twice the amplitude. And we can modify a sound wave that way. And so that would be a legitimate operation we could perform on sound waves. But what about multiplication by a negative number? Well, what that does is you really have to visualize how the, for a sound wave, how the pressure fluctuates. So if this is a sound wave, and here you think of time going in this direction, and the sound wave, the air pressure just fluctuating in this sinusoidal fashion. Well, what multiplication by a negative number, like minus one, would do is it would think of this as the equilibrium point, where there's actually no pressure. Here we have a large negative pressure, large positive pressure. What would we regard as multiplication by minus one, it would convert this sound wave into one where the displacement from the equilibrium prism is reversed. So at this point here, I have a negative displacement. I would convert that to a positive displacement. So you get something like this. So this multiplication by minus one would not change the amplitude of the oscillation, but it would change, it would change by 180 degrees the phase of the oscillation. Okay. Oh, I have a question here. When adding two vectors, do both sets have to have the same length? And yes, that's true. You cannot add a two-dimensional vector to a three-dimensional vector because there'll be one straggling component that has no rule to compute with. Okay, so yeah, I just glanced up at the chat and tried to answer a question that appeared there. Okay, so so in fact, I should remark that even though this seems like an extraneous operation, that I'm sort of forcing some notion of vector addition and scalar multiplication on oscillations, but in fact, this is very practical. When you change the phase of oscillation by multiplying it a sound wave by minus one, this is actually the basic principle by how noise canceling headphones work. Inside your headphone, you have a small microphone that captures the outside noise. Then you have an electronic component that reverses the phase of that oscillation. And then inside the headphone, you have a little speaker. And what it does, it tries to replicate the exact opposite of the external noise, and it adds that to the sound coming out of the signal going into your headphones so that the external noise is canceled, leaving only the internal noise that's coming from the signal into the headphones. So in fact, these two vector operations have a very practical application in acoustics. And moreover, they show you in what we'll see later on. In fact, they give this set of all possible sound waves the structure of what we regard as a vector space. And the formal theory for manipulating three-dimensional vectors or four-dimensional vectors, that's all going to carry over and allow us to manipulate sound waves in a similar fashion. Okay. Now we're getting into further development. We have two operations, vector addition and scalar multiplication. Sorry, this line is not written correctly. What I meant to say, the operations of scalar addition and vector addition and scalar multiplication, that you can combine those operations. So ignore the typo in the first sentence. And realize that if I have a pair of numbers and I have a pair of vectors, then I can combine all four of these objects and get a single vector. And this would be the construction. You take the first number and you multiply the first number. You get a scalar multiple of the vector A by the number lambda. And then we can add to that a scalar multiple of the vector B by the number nu. And the result of this, combining these two operations, which is actually three, you're gonna have to scalar multiply once, scalar multiply again, and then add. So this actually represents three basic operations. But the end result is going to be a single vector. We call constructions like this linear combinations. More generally, we can have a set of n vectors and a set of n numbers, and we can create an even more general linear combination by adding together multiple scalar multiples of a list of n vectors. And that will again be called a linear combination. And in fact, this construction, making other vectors from a given list of vectors, this is really, really common in this course. All right, also, but less common, but frequently useful in applications, is the notion of vector subtraction. I'm not introducing this as a fundamental operation like scalar multiplication and vector addition, because in fact, scalar multiplication can be understood as a particular linear combination. A particular way of multiplying, scalar multiplying vectors and then adding them together. What this vector subtraction is, it's the addition of one vector to the scalar multiple of the second vector by the number minus one. And what it's used for in applications is to indicate the displacement between two vectors. So let me show you the geometric picture of what this vector subtraction does. If you have two vectors A and B portrayed as directed line segments, their difference, A minus B, is going to be the directed line segment for which the base is at the tip of the first, or of the thing you're subtracting, and the tip of the result is the same as the tip of the vector from which B is being subtracted. Okay. I have a question. I be recording this lecture? I should be recording this lecture now. What happened on Monday is I thought I was recording, and I had paused the recording when I started the lecture because I had started early, and then I forgot to unpause it. So what I did on Canvas is I replaced the Zoom lecture for the first lecture with the first lecture of my second 1130 section of linear algebra. And I'll frequently do that. If I flub up something in one lecture, the video I will post will be the better copy of the two lectures that I gave on that given day. So yes, I'm recording the lectures, I'm posting them on Canvas, but the one that's actually posted is gonna be the better version of the two lectures I gave on the given day. Will there be any homework or quiz? It looks like someone trying to avoid class. There is a homework assignment. It's already posted on WebAssign, but I'm not planning on giving a quiz this week. Okay, so let's move on. The zero vector is simply the vector from which every component is equal to zero. So here's the zero vector inside the vector space R3. So R3 is the ordered list of three real numbers. And here's a particular ordered list of three numbers, right? 0, 0, and 0. That's called the zero vector. And just like the number zero in algebra, If you add this particular vector to any other vector, you get back what you started off with. A is going to, and moreover, the way you can tell if two vectors are equal is if you subtract them one from the other, you get the zero vector. So two vectors are going to be the same if and only if their difference is zero. Now this looks like an algebraic equation. I mean, an algebraic equation in the sense of algebra from high school. But the way you need to understand this is that a vector A is equal to a vector B if and only if the difference between A and B is the zero vector. So what I want to caution you about is that notationally, when I write a vector A plus B, if I simply write two letters down, A plus B, you don't know what it is. What is A plus B? Well, it depends on what A and B is. If A and B are numbers, then I would add these like numbers. If I'm interpreting A and B as vectors, I need to use the rule for adding vectors. But notationally, it's going to look the same as if we're adding numbers. And that's going to cause some confusion initially. When you see some symbols on a page, you're going to first have to recall what this symbol represents. It's not going to be enough to simply see you're going to combine these two guys, because the rule for combining them depends on what the object it represents is. So be wary of that. And that's why it's very important, whenever possible, to actually decorate your symbols somehow to indicate what they represent. So my putting little arrows over this Latin lowercase letter means I want you to think of this not as a simply the letter A. I want you to think of this as representing a vector, okay? Oh, I'm sorry, you can't see the top. Is that better? Okay, so the distinction I was making, if I simply write A plus B down, you don't know what, if you don't know what A and B are as mathematical objects, you can't really combine them. But what I'll try to do to help you understand what's going on is I'll frequently, at least on handwritten notes, adorn my vectors with little arrows over the top. So you don't think of these as adding two numbers, but rather as adding two vectors. Okay. So at the bottom of this page, I just tell you about how I'm going to try to keep things clear by denoting vectors by putting little arrows over them. In my lecture notes, I don't have to resort to arrows. I'm typically using a boldface font to indicate vectors. And then if I want to indicate the number zero, I'll use the same symbol, effectively a zero, but it won't be written in boldface. So on the left-hand side, I have the vector zero. And on the right-hand side, I have its components, each of which is the number zero. Okay, so that's as far as I expected to get today. Let me just stop here. And what we'll do starting on Friday's lecture is I've got all the apparatus set up, and now we'll start to get into what this linear algebra is good for. And now, first thing we'll start to look at is solving systems of linear equations and relating them to matrices. So in fact, I have one more fundamental object to introduce, and that is the notion of what a matrix is. But I'll introduce that not directly, it's basically an ordered list of vectors, but rather I'm going to introduce it as from an application, that matrices are going to arise as soon as you start to consider how to solve large systems of linear equations. Okay, but I'll put that off till Friday, and I'll stick around in case there are additional questions. Oh, sorry, there is a question coming in on the chat. So the zero vector is a linear combination of any choice of vectors d1 through dn, choosing all scalars to be zero. This is good. I'm really happy people are writing questions out, because it's the language that we need to get straight here. So What we're gonna really gonna be essential in understanding the material in this course is to go back to the very basic definitions. So a vector, this is gonna always be an ordered list of number. Right, and then the zero vector, well, in particular, it's gonna be a vector. So it's gonna be an ordered list of numbers, but we use particular numbers.
I cannot see that paper.
I'm sorry, is that better? For the zero vector, I'm now talking about a particular vector. And so a particular ordered list of numbers, and the way you get a zero vector that's in a three-dimensional space is you simply write the number zero three times and enclose it in square braces. Okay, so this is a particular example of the abstract idea. And we're going to constantly be doing this. We'll have abstract objects that are going to boil down to our basic definition, and then we're going to have explicit renditions of these things, and these are going to be explicit concrete vectors. Notice that I say vectors and ordered list of numbers. I don't have anything to calculate with. However, when I give you a particular example, here I've got a list of numbers, and I'll begin, at least you're seeing numbers here, and that should hint that there's something you can calculate with now. Okay, so that jump from abstraction to concrete realization, we're gonna be doing this all the time, and it's important. And questions like your initial one, the zero vector linear combination of choice of vectors. See, this is confusing you because you're grabbing things that occurred in various portions of the lecture, but really the idea is to go back to the basics and construct things on the basis rather than sort of fuzzy ideas of the things that went on, okay? Okay, so we gotta move up the paper, yeah. Well, that's all that's displayed. Okay, any other questions? Okay, for those who cannot see, you should perhaps change your point of view. There should be at least three windows. Let me stop the share here. You should be seeing my pad of paper where I'll draw things out by hand. You'll see my voice, so hopefully you can read my lips a little bit. And also the lecture slides that I do via a screen share. But hopefully with these three modes of communication, these lectures will be fairly easy to follow. Oh, in calculus 3, you also learn vectors using vertical notation. Well, in fact, in this course too, we will eventually convert to writing vectors vertically rather than horizontally. In fact, when we write them vertically, the idea is actually to subtly think of these vectors as a special case of an even more general object called a matrix. I'm also introduce those now. So a matrix is more than just a list of numbers. It's a set of numbers that are written in a particular order, but also vertically and horizontally. So a list, this list 000 could also be written vertically, and that's perhaps what you're alluding to by saying that vectors in physics are represented vertically. As long as we know the ordering, these things are equivalent. As long as this is the first component, the second component, third component, the first component, the second component, and third component. These are the same vector as ordered list of numbers. It's just I'm using different notation to write to display that ordered list. But when we start to think of vectors as a special case of more general objects, say 1, 2, 3, 2, 1, 2, here I have six numbers, but I've got they occur in a certain order along horizontally and a certain order vertically. So these are what we'll call matrices, and you see that this horizontal list is a special case of a matrix with one row and three columns, while this vertical vector is a special case of a matrix with three rows and a single column. But that's all coming up in Friday's lecture, okay? Yeah, and yes, you can add vertical vectors just as you would horizontal vectors, as long as the idea is you add the same component to the same component. So if you're writing, have two vectors written horizontally, you know, you grab from the first slot and you combine it with the second slot to get the sum. And that doesn't make any difference whether you write the thing vertically or horizontally. It's how you combine the individual component that gives you the definition of that vector addition. There's a matrix compared to a dictionary encoding. Somewhat. It's actually closer to, if you're thinking of coding, I would think of it as a two-dimensional array. So an array where you have, you need to have two bits of integers, two indices to indicate a particular element of the array. Okay, further questions? Okay, good. Then I will see you on Friday.